All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I am a search advocate here at Google in Switzerland, and part of what we do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around their website and web search, and we can try to find some answers. A handful of things were submitted on YouTube already, so we can have some of those to go through, but as always, if any of you want to get started with the first question, feel free to jump on in. Robin, go for it. Oh, we can't hear you. Oh, no. You're not muted, but the microphone doesn't seem to work.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, perfect.
You can? I'm fixing this. I'm sorry. Here you go. Okay, it's fixed. So thank you for the opportunity. I don't want to take too much time, so if I take too much time, please interrupt me. I'm wondering how does it work when lots of links to websites are deleted, for example, after a manual penalty? Is it considered as some kind of alarm signal by the Google algorithm, which would, for example, take lots of quality pages that were on page one and go push them far, far in the pages four or five?
So it wouldn't be considered an alarm signal in the sense that it's like links come and links go, and that's kind of normal. I think the effect that you might see is if the website previously was artificially showing too visibly in search because of those links, mm-hmm. and then you remove those links, then obviously like that artificial support is no longer there. And then you would see changes in search. But that's not because we like see, oh, lots of links disappeared, or lots of links became nofollow or got disavowed. It's more that, oh, there are fewer links, and we do use links to some extent in our ranking. So, like we don't have that support anymore.
Okay, so if for example, on a website I saw it goes far on the pages. It's considered as where it should be by the algorithm.
I mean, where it should be, that's always like open for discussion. But that's. So I mean it's kind of tricky because if these were say more kind of like spammy or artificial links, then usually our algorithms try to recognize that and ignore that already. So if you're removing things that we're already ignoring, then you wouldn't see any change.
Yes.
So yeah.
Maybe those were some good links. Could it be because when you get a manual penalty, or in general, right? I'm speaking general, not specifically, but it feels very urgent, and you have to act super quickly, and it feels is very fearful because like your website has disappeared maybe, and could it be that maybe some website's owner. And take away too many links, and some of them that should be okay.
Yeah, I think that happens every now and then. But okay. I mean, the important part is also like we use a lot more than just links for ranking. Mm-hmm. So it's not like if you removed one link too many, then suddenly your website will disappear kind of thing. We use a lot of different factors, and okay. I do understand kind of the side that, oh, you get a manual action, and it's like, oh, I will just delete everything, and it's like, make sure everything is clean.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying when you get that.
Yeah, I think going too extreme is not very useful, but it's sometimes tricky. Like, if it's your website and you care about it and you just want to get everything cleaned up again, then I could see that some people might say, well, I'll just remove everything I can find.
Okay. So I have a next question. Please feel free to interrupt me if I take too much time. So I understand that backlinks are not the only signal you use, but still I believe they're pretty strong signal. And so when you read the Google guidelines, it just says, well, for link building, you don't have to do anything. Just make quality, authoritative, original content, and the links will come by themselves. And I'm pretty sure that in the long term, that's how it works. Sure, but it might take years, and not 1 or 2 years, but especially in younger markets like in Europe, in France, and stuff like that. It might take years, and so is that an inconvenience that like Google assumes and understands and recognizes and says, well, that's just how it is, or are there ways that you can make it a little quicker, like encourage people to, hey, look, I've done some really quality stuff here. Can I?
Yeah, there are two aspects there. On the one hand, if you're in an area where it's hard to kind of get support from the ecosystem in terms of links, then it's like, keep in mind, everyone else who is in that area has the same problem. So it's kind of like if you have a knitting store in a small city, like it's kind of normal that you wouldn't get a lot of links to a site like that. But at the same time, like the other knitting stores in the same city, they have the same problem, right? It's not that one site gets 50 million links and the other site gets zero. It's kind of an even playing field.
Okay.
And the other thing with regards to links is our guidelines are pretty specific around the type of links that we would consider unnatural. And like you mentioned, the approach of like creating something really fantastic and people will recognize it over time and kind of link to it over time. I think that's one aspect, but there's also a lot that you can do kind of to encourage that. It's kind of similar to how when you start a small business, you do advertising. You encourage people to come to your website, to look at your content. And if you have some great content, then obviously those people have like a chance of linking to your content. Other things you could do are kind of the more PR-oriented outreach things, where you do something really fantastic on your website and you reach out to maybe local press or something. And it's like, hey, look at this cool stuff that I did here. I'm happy to talk to you about it. Like, would you be interested in featuring that? And those are the kind of things where you're not going out and placing links on other people's websites, but rather you're kind of reaching out to them and saying, like, look, I have this really cool stuff. Maybe you would like to take a look. Maybe you would like to write about it on your site as well. And that's, I think, the kind of thing, especially with newer businesses, where you can kind of take a step up and be a little bit more proactive rather than just like, I put a website on the internet and maybe hopefully someone would find it at some day. Because if you do that, then it's really hard for us to recognize that there's actually something really useful and important here. So kind of taking that step and dragging people to your website and saying, like, look at this cool stuff. And if they like it, then they can do something with it. If they don't like it, then it's like obviously a different problem.
Forwarding on that subject, so in those kinds of PR moves that you can make, how do collaborations work in the eyes of Google? Like what's allowed and what's not allowed?
From our side, anything where there's no exchange of value for a link is essentially okay. I don't know, probably not anything, but for the most part, like if you're not doing something where you're saying like, I will link to you if you link to me, or I will pay you this much money if you link to me, then essentially that's okay. The important part is really that the other website is kind of deciding on their own to link to your website.
Okay. It gets maybe a little tricky there, because sometimes like you invite someone and they collaborate and they ask for something in return, especially in younger markets like here. It's really like sometimes people are very like, I give but you give, like they really want that exchange, and you say but we can't really. It's tricky.
Yeah, I don't know like what exactly you're working on, so it's hard for me to say. But
okay.
I mean, it's something where it is sometimes tricky. But I think the important part is also, like I mentioned, we do use a lot more than just links with regards to our ranking. So links are especially important in the beginning when you're just starting out. Like if we don't know about your website at all, then obviously like we have to find a link to it somehow. But once we know about your website and can kind of understand how it fits in with the context of the web, then that kind of can grow a little bit more organically. You don't need to kind of like constantly add links to a website.
Okay. Yeah. For the original boost, maybe, and then when it flows, when it's in running speed.
I guess you could frame it like that. Yeah.
Okay. So I might be just if I take too much time, please don't hesitate to interrupt me. So on that collaboration side, so I have a good example. So let's say you're a comparison website, right? And you do something on the best yoga mats, and you contact original and authoritative and expert yoga practitioner who have blogs, and you invite them to you invite them in a collaboration. So you basically say, hey. How about you check out our article and you make propositions of to make it better. So for example, you add, oh, okay, so you said that this is important for yoga mats choosing, and I as an expert, I'd also put that and this and that, and so they help you make your content better, and you give them so you link to them in regards, and you say like we collaborated with this expert, and you give them a link to the website. Their website in recognition as a source, and so maybe after that you say, oh well, if you want to mention that you were in this article as an expert on your website, well, if you want to, you can do it. Just mention it on one of your article, or maybe create a new article where you say, oh, I just intervened in that website. Is that okay?
In general, that's okay. I think it's something businesses over time, like you recognize it, and yes. it's like, oh, they just want me to do this back and forth thing. Yeah. But it's like, as long as you're not forcing them to do that and saying like, in order to be listed in our comparison website, yeah. you will need to link to my website kind of thing. As long as it's open like that, then generally that's okay.
Okay.
I think it's like all of these things are a little bit tricky in that it's easy to take one example like this.
Sure.
Where I think like in your situation, like that case sounds pretty reasonable. And to expand it and say, oh, well, I will contact 50 million people and do this game with them. Then that's something where our web spam team might say, well, it looks like this is just a giant scheme. It's not actually something kind of that's happening organically.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that information. That clears things up a lot. And so if maybe someone had a problem before, it might be because they just made way too many of these, and so it was excessive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Well, that's all the questions I had. Thank you very, very much for your answers.
Cool. All right. Any other questions before we get started with the one submitted on YouTube? No more questions. Cool. Well, I mean, we'll still have room for more questions along the way. So no pressure. Okay, let me look at the ones on YouTube. So the first one I think is kind of tricky. It's like a few months ago, we started working for a new company. We found that one of their local websites had some strange SEO issues. It was indexed in Google, but not in Bing. And later, the Bing technical support told me there was a sort of block that they removed. The website was launched in 2018, but there is no organic traffic until April 2020. And the traffic is far below the expectations. We recently found out that this domain hosted another website 10 years ago that looked a bit spammy. We haven't found any manual actions, and it kind of goes on. Essentially, it's like, is this domain okay or is it not okay? So from looking at things from our side, I assume you have it verified in Search Console. If there are no manual actions that you see there in Search Console, then there are no manual actions associated with this website. And taking a look a little bit further on our side, I also didn't see anything special happening there. And it definitely wouldn't be the case that if there was another website hosted on the same domain 10 years ago that was spammy, that you would still be having any kind of side effects from that. So these kind of, I think, spammy after effects are things that in general you would not see for kind of like with a pause of 10 years in between with a website like that. And in any case, if there were spammy after effects, you would see that as a manual action in Search Console, and you'd be able to kind of like resolve that, clean that up. The one area where you might see some kind of after effects for a while is with regards to links. If you had, or if the old website had a lot of really, really bad artificial links associated with it, then that might be something that at some point would count kind of against your website in that sense, even if in the meantime you have a different website up there. But my assumption is that if this was the case 10 years ago, and for 10 years now, nothing kind of problematic has been happening with regards to links with that website, then that would kind of not be the case anymore. So my assumption here is that this website is essentially just ranking as it normally would with regards to its content at the moment, and that there is nothing kind of artificially holding it back. And if you were to move to a different domain name to try to escape whatever might be associated with this domain name, I don't think you would see any change in visibility in search. And moving domain names is always a bit of a hassle, and it takes a lot of time. So my recommendation here would be more to focus on the website itself rather than to try to move off to other domains. Do the Core Web Vitals affect AMP pages? We essentially treat AMP pages like normal HTML pages when it comes to search, for the most part. So we would rank them appropriately. At the moment, we don't use the Core Web Vitals with regards to ranking, but the plan is to introduce that, I think, in a month or two. And when that happens, that will affect AMP pages as well. I think the useful part with regards to AMP pages is, by default, they're really fast. So for the most part, if you create a normal AMP page, it would be probably normal to see that it meets the thresholds of the Core Web Vitals, and then you'd be kind of on the good side automatically. So with that regard, I think AMP pages are a great way to make really fast web pages. You can make other kinds of really fast web pages. And if a website is appropriately fast and has a good user experience, then it'll pass the Core Web Vitals thresholds. And essentially, from the page experience ranking factor, that would be OK. But it doesn't need to be an AMP page. It can be an AMP page if you want to do that. We have a WordPress site updating the movie gallery. We get pictures daily for the same movies. We only create one gallery for one movie. The pictures we get every day are updated in the same gallery. Can we change the date and time when it's updated daily? Would that be a problem for search ranking? So you can definitely update the date and time on a page whenever you make changes on a web page. If you're just shuffling pictures around in a gallery, that feels kind of misleading with regards to updating the date just because you're shuffling pictures around. So from a user point of view, I would find that a little bit awkward. I don't think it would change anything with regards to search, and we definitely wouldn't rank those pages differently in search just because you're changing the date and time on a page. So my recommendation there would be, if your CMS does this by default and you can't control it, then like fine. If you're doing this manually, kind of like tweaking the date every time you make a small change, like shuffling images, then I would recommend just skipping that and only update the date when you actually make significant changes on a page. I have a few questions, but the overarching question is, what are the things that a website manager should do to ensure that URLs are published URLs published are indexed in Google as soon as they are published. I think like everyone wants that. Like you make something and you want it visible in Google right away. But let's see. So are URLs in news sitemaps indexed more frequently than regular sitemap indexes that are submitted in Search Console? So news sitemaps are specific sitemaps for news websites, specifically for Google News. So if you don't have a news website that's listed in Google News, then you don't really need to do that. News sitemaps are limited to 1,000 URLs per sitemap file. And that limit is there so that we can kind of like get the content as quickly as possible, especially on news websites where we want to get the content quickly. So that's something where if we are already trying to get everything indexed as quickly as possible from your website, then using a news sitemap is a good way to help us with that. Just a moment. But if we're currently not already indexing your content as quickly as possible, then putting it in a news sitemap won't change anything. So that's kind of from that angle, it's like if we're trying to get everything quickly, then obviously using the right type of sitemap file helps. But just artificially putting it in a sitemap file like this doesn't change it. Go ahead.
Can we avoid index sitemaps in news websites so that crawling frequency should be higher via news sitemap?
For news websites, so the index sitemaps are essentially just a collection of the sitemap files that you have. So it's not something where you're like submitting more content and making it harder to crawl. It's more like, here's everything from my website. And usually we do recommend the same that mix of like one. Like for news sites, one news sitemap with all of the fresh content, and then everything else in another sitemap or a set of sitemap index files. And that mix makes it possible for us to try to kind of like get the new things fast, but also make sure we're not missing any of the old things.
Thanks.
Hello. Sure. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi, John, sir. Yes, sir. It's a very pleasure to connecting with you, sir. Sir, my question is, I am facing an issue in Google Dance. Like my website position is like continuously fluctuating from page 1 to page 4th and 5th. And this is the major issue I facing since last month. So what can I do right now? Could you please suggest anything?
So if you're seeing fluctuations like that, then usually that's a sign that our algorithms are not sure how to show your website appropriately in search. And usually the good part there is that it doesn't take a lot more to make our algorithms a little bit happier, and then you see fewer fluctuations. But it's hard to figure out like what that little bit more is. So my recommendation there is always to try to find a way to significantly improve the quality of the website overall so that the algorithms are for sure always on the good side. And that I think it's hard to kind of like turn that into something practical. And that's something where you almost have to like know your website and you know your users and figure out ways to really try to improve it with a big step.
So could you please let me know how much time it takes?
How long that takes?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. It's really hard to say. Yeah. It's like on the one hand, we have to recrawl the content. Like if you make significant changes on your website, we have to recrawl that. And to recrawl that across a larger site, that can take a bit of time, especially if you make bigger changes like across everything, if you change the structure of your website. I would assume something like that, just purely from a technical point of view, would take, I don't know, maybe a month. And for understanding the quality changes overall, I would see that as something where it probably takes a few months on our side to actually understand that this website has significantly changed. So not something that you can fix in a week. It's probably more like, I don't know, 3-4 months, something like that, if you make significant quality changes.
OK, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
John, I have a question.
OK.
So the fact check articles, if my website doing fact check article, it's a ranking signal for that website, or it's any that website getting any benefit from Google in authority and anything like that?
If I don't think so. My understanding is that it's more like normal rich results, which are essentially just ways of showing that information in the search results slightly differently. It's not the case that we would be ranking that page higher because of that.
And we have some certification from International Fact Checking Network. So is any it's help in any ETA parameters? If any that kind of certification help in EAT parameter?
Possibly. I don't know. I don't know what certifications you have and what we would watch out for, but if these are things that we could recognize while crawling and indexing the web, it's possible we would be able to spot that and take that into account. But I don't know. It probably also depends a little bit on what exactly it is. Like if you reach out to a random blogger and they give you a certificate, then that's slightly different than if it's a really, really highly official certificate. Cool. Let me run through some of the other submitted questions, and then we can get back to the live questions as well.
Sir, I have one question, sir.
I'll get back to you. Is that OK? Let me just go through some of the submitted ones, because like they submitted them ahead of time, and then we can get some more of the live questions from you all too. Okay. In May 2020, it was announced that Google will incorporate the page experience metrics into the ranking criteria for top stories in search on mobile and remove the AMP requirement from top stories eligibility. Does this also apply to Discover as well? In other words, will the AMP requirements be removed from Discover? So even at the moment, we don't require AMP for Discover. It's something where we do show AMP pages because we understand that they're normal pages, but we also show normal pages in Discover as well. The difference primarily with regards to AMP and non-AMP pages in Discover is with regards to the size of the thumbnail image that we show. By default, for AMP pages, we can show a slightly bigger thumbnail image. By default, for web pages, we have to show a slightly smaller thumbnail image. However, if you use the, I think, Max Image Preview robots meta tag, you can let us know that we can also show a larger thumbnail image for your web pages. And if you do that, then essentially the way that the pages are shown in Discover are essentially the same, in that you have the larger thumbnail image if you choose to do that, plus your normal snippet, and you can be shown essentially like any other page there. When comparing Core Web Vitals between AMP and mobile pages, does a mobile site page need to outperform the AMP page, or meeting the Web Vitals targets set by Google is sufficient for the mobile page to replace the AMP in the top stories and discoverable? Essentially, what we watch, so I don't actually know like how we would handle that in specifically in the top stories carousel. So with regards to the ranking, especially there. So I don't think it's as easy as it's like your page has to be faster, then we will show it in top stories instead of someone else's pages. It's probably the case that we just use lots of different factors with regards to ranking in the top stories carousel. And we also plan on using speed there. So that's something where I don't think blindly focusing on speed makes sense. A good comparison that I've used is, or that I think is a good comparison, is you can make an empty page really fast, but it's not very useful for users. So similarly, like if you made a non-AMP page super fast by removing all of the content, then for us that wouldn't be very useful to show in the top stories, even if it's super fast. There are lots of things that come into play with regards to ranking in situations like this, and they also apply in top stories. I have no idea how we do ranking in Discover. That's kind of a mystery to me. But within top stories, it seems like something where we could take a lot of the existing web search ranking factors too. I have a website that mainly deals with providing services for approvals and certifications that are mandatory for importers and manufacturers of electronics and IT products. On the services page, I've put the JSON-LD for contacts, logo, addresses. If I put FAQ structured data markup on every services page to make it appear in the rich results, will it affect any way my website is appearing for the search results intended for service providers kind of query? So it's perfectly fine to have multiple kinds of structured data on a page. The structured data should be appropriate for the primary content of the page, though. So that's something where it's like you wouldn't put like the same FAQ on all of your product pages, because those questions wouldn't apply to every product individually. So with that in mind, I think if you focus on what is the primary content of this page and provide structured data for that, then you're probably on the safe side. It's not the case that we would say, if you have this kind of structured data, we will ignore all of the other kinds of structured data. We will always take that into account. However, we might not always show that in the same way. So for example, I don't know what the current mix is for things like this. Like if you have recipe structured data on a page and maybe you also have FAQ structured data on a page, then probably we would choose one of those two types when it comes to picking which way to show that page. We wouldn't show all of the types of structured data at the same time. But it's not that there's a defined order or priority with regards to the different rich results types. So my recommendation there would be kind of like focus on the primary element of the page. And if you could provide structured data around that, that's a great use. If you just have generic structured data that you put on all of your pages, then probably that's not a good use of your time. One of my websites has fallen down. Oh, I think we talked about this briefly. For which cases do I need self-referential canonical? So self-referential canonical is when you have a link rel canonical, and you essentially point to the same page that you're already on. And from our point of view, this can make sense, because a lot of pages on the web can be crawled with different variations of URLs. So for example, you might have the same page under www and on www on your website. And if we crawl one version, and we don't have any link rel canonical on that page, then we don't know, is this the version that you want to have indexed, or do you want the other version to be indexed? And then we might pick one. Whereas if you do have the rel canonical on that page, then we would know, oh, this is the www version, but you want the non-www version indexed, so we will focus on that one. Similarly, if you have URL parameters, for example, if you're tracking kind of events with analytics or some other reason that maybe you're tracking refers or something else with the parameters where you have a question mark and then parameter equals some text, if you don't want to have those parameters indexed, then having a self-referential canonical to the primary version of that page is a good way to catch that. So in particular, if you have an HTML page that is static HTML, then you can't really check to see if all of these factors in the URL are perfect. You can, however, put the self-referential canonical on the page, and then we would be able to see, oh, this HTML page with these parameters, actually, the canonical should just be the HTML page. And then we can focus on that. So that's kind of the angle that I take there, is that using self-referential canonicals is kind of a good way to, I don't know, make it so that it's easier for us to pick the right version when it comes to search. Are link, rel next, and rel previous ignored? Yes, they're ignored. At some point, we use that to understand pagination better. But our systems have gotten kind of a little bit further in that we're able to recognize kind of common types of pagination setups on our own. And we can process those as normal internal links and understand the context from there a little bit better. So we no longer need these special kind of link attributes. You can keep them on your pages if you have them there already. They can be useful for things like accessibility, where if someone is using maybe a screen reader or some other kind of assistive technology and they want to see the next version of that page, then this kind of markup can help them too. So it's not something that you should kind of remove by default, but rather it's just, well, Google doesn't use it, but maybe other systems do use it. How to optimize a knowledge-based website like dictionary.com with very short content and less than 400 words per page. So first of all, I would not focus on the number of words per page. I think that's a terrible metric when it comes to kind of understanding if content is good or not. Sometimes it's useful as a metric which you can use kind of like internally as a guideline on your side, like, I want to provide a lot of information, or where there's a strong information need, I will provide more information, or where there's a lower information need, I'll just provide less information. All of these things are useful maybe on your side internally, but it's not something that Google is going to use. So Google is not going to count the words on your page and say, oh, 300 words, we will never show this page in the search results. With regards to kind of a knowledge-based website like that, I think you really need to work hard to make sure that you're providing unique value and something really interesting for your users with regards to a website like that. It's very tempting as a programmer to go in and say, well, I have this database of information. I will just make a website out of it. And the database of information is something that I've collected from the internet or whatever. It's very easy to go off and create a website that has millions of pages based on a database. But it's hard to do that in a way that is actually useful for people. And that's essentially what our systems are looking out for. Because this database of information will probably already be on the web a number of times. And then going off and it's like, you can create all of this again, but making sure that we show your version instead of the other versions that we have, for that you really need to provide something more than just a dump of the data there. And similarly, we sometimes see that for businesses where they take, like, as the database, they take a list of cities or a list of countries or a list of different types of services, and you take this database of 1,000 services and 50,000 cities, and you cross them together, and you create this website with like a giant mass of pages, which are just database driven. And you can do that, of course. But our systems, when they look at that, they'll say, well, like, what is the value here? Why should we be showing this to users? And for that, you need to do more than just, well, it's correct data, and it's like short content, but it's good content. You really need to provide something that users pick up on and that they'd like to see in search. And I think that's always the hard part there. Like, going off and creating these things is easy, but doing that in a way that is actually useful, that's kind of tricky. Cool. Let me see. Like, maybe we even ran out of questions. Yeah, I think we got through pretty much everything that was submitted. So cool, we can go more live questions from you all. Dido.
Yes, John. Before asking my question, I wanted to support your answer about the content length. That me and Nicola have tested this with several different articles for websites, and I can confirm that it's more about how you write and what you write, and how you provide the answer to the user, compared to how lengthy is the answer, because it could be 2,000 words, but it could be absolutely pointless, and so on. Okay, so my question in regarding the content is, we were wondering about future snippets here in Bulgaria. Is it possible to expect them soon? Because they are really good elements of Google. They're really attracting, and we do our best to provide usually the best content when we prepare articles for the websites. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought we had featured snippets everywhere. So they're not in Bulgaria?
No,
not yet. Okay, that's weird. Okay, I don't know what the plans are there, but I can check to see what the team there says. I mean, I can't like give you a date and say we will do this then, because I don't know. And even if the team tells me like, oh, we're going to launch next week, I can't really tell you ahead of time. But if it can happen that something like this gets stuck and they're like, oh, we have 5 countries left where we need to launch this in, and it's like, oh, let's go off and do it. But yeah, I mean, sometimes with some of these search features, they're also tricky policy questions associated with that, where they say, we would like to do it here, but actually because of some local laws or some local policies, we can't easily do that. So that's sometimes a bit tricky. But I'll ping the team and see what they say.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
Hello.
Hi.
So John, I have a question. Actually, I wrote down some. Yeah. We have M version, mobile version website, m-en.abc.com. And we have also desktop version, en.abc.com. And the problem is that our consultant said m-en.abc.com is not a mobile domain. So Googlebot cannot, we have some kind of advantage, disadvantage for the website indexing and domain ranking. Do we need to change the domain? That's the first question.
So the M version is not mobile friendly, or how do you mean it's not?
It's mobile friendly, and we have crawling already, but it's kind of possibility that we could have great disadvantage. So we don't know. So we have to maybe change the domain or make it the other site.
Yeah, I don't think you would need to change that. So we support the separate mobile URLs configuration, where if you have one URL for desktop and one URL for mobile, I think that's what you have, right?
Right.
Yeah. If you have that set up and you link between the versions appropriately, there's like the link rel canonical to desktop and link alternate to the mobile version, then we would be able to understand that configuration. And we would be able to treat that the same as any other website. We don't recommend that anymore. It's not that we say you shouldn't do it. We just say, like, if you make a new website, we recommend just making one version. The main reason for just having one version is to make it so that it's easier for you to maintain and that you understand what is happening better. Because we will try to index the mobile version of the site, but you have the canonical set to the desktop version, and then in Search Console, you see both versions. it gets a bit confusing. So we recommend just one version, but we support the other setups. And in the past, we have recommended that as well. So it's like a lot of websites out there use that separate setup.
OK, quick question, Mr. John. We have news website, dadadaabc.com, and that's our website. But we use abc.kr as 302 redirection. So does it affect SEO in bad way? And also, we try to register abc.kr domain in Search Console because we need to delete some news when there is problems in the news.
Yeah. Is it such that everyone is redirected to the .kr website?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay.
From then abc.kr to abc.com.
Yeah.
Not everything about some of them are in the abc.com and some of them are in abc.kr. But all the directions, destinations are abc.com.
Okay. Yeah. I think that should be fine. So the 302 redirect is theoretically a temporary redirect, and we might choose to index the kind of source URL instead of the destination URL. But if you have that redirect in place for the long run, like more than a short period of years, then we will treat that as a permanent redirect, and we will try to index the destination page. And it's not that there is any value that is lost because it's a 302 redirect. It's really we have these two URLs, and one is redirecting to the other one. Which one should we index? And we'll try to index the one that is clear for us as the primary version.
No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that should be fine. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Let me just see. There's one more question I think I missed from YouTube. How long does Google give a persistent error if the site is temporary using 503? So 503 is a temporary server error code. And from our point of view, it's something where we don't have a fixed timeline with regards to when we drop individual URLs from our index when they return 503. But we recommend doing that at most for a couple of days. So somewhere between kind of 2 to 7 days, something like that at maximum. And at that point, we will start dropping URLs from the website. So it's not that there's an exact date or time limit that is there. It's really, if it's a temporary error, then it should be temporary. It shouldn't be something that is in place for a longer time. All right. I think someone else had a question.
Sir, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, sir, again, I have one question. Like, I am working on a YMYL site, like pharmaceutical industry, OK? And what I realize is that this industry is totally different from any other industry. If I'm working on any IT company or any other industry, so pharmaceutical basically is totally different. We need to follow each and everything like EAT. So I'm just asking you what kind of link I can create for YMYL site. Like content is good, but we need to create some link, quality link. So what do you suggest? What kind of link is good for YMYL site?
I mean, the link should be natural links. So it shouldn't be the case that you're going off and creating links to your website, right?
Yes.
So that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the starting point there. And based on that, I don't think like you would need to do anything different in that regard. Essentially, like creating useful and helpful content that people want to link to makes sense. And you can't really control who is linking to your website. So from that point of view, it's not like you should avoid having these kind of people linked to your website, and instead you should make sure these kind of people are linking to your website. Like that's rarely something that you can really control. So from that point of view, I think focusing on like what kind of link should I get for my website, that's probably the wrong approach there. But I do kind of appreciate that, especially when it comes to pharmaceutical and medical websites, you do need to be a little bit more critical with regards to what you put on your website, how you work with your website, all of these things. And that's something like I think Nicola dropped a lot of links in the chat about EAT and things like that. I think that's all worth looking into. And it does make sense to spend a little bit more time to think about like what you want to do here and how to do it in a way that is long-term, sustainable, and where users, when they go to your website, they understand this is a trustworthy website.
Okay, thank you, sir. So one more question is there. In Google Search Console, I have submitted my sitemap, okay? But after a couple of days, what I found is sitemap is indexed properly. All the web pages are indexed properly. But what I observe is there is number of link found is zero. So why it is showing zero, I'm not getting. Could you please let me know why it is showing zero, number of link count?
Where are you seeing that?
Inside the Search Console. The number of link Search Console found is zero. It is showing zero. But earlier it was showing 200 links were there. But right now it is showing zero. But each and every page is indexed properly. But the figure is zero. Earlier it was 200.
So that's the external links report that you're looking at, or?
No, it's a complete website internal link. There are 200 pages on the website. All of them are indexed properly. But right now, the figure is not 200. It's a zero, showing zero, NAN. It's showing NAN.
OK. I don't know. Could you post maybe a screenshot or link to a screenshot in the chat? I can take a look at that. I don't know.
Yeah, I will definitely share the screenshot.
Okay, cool. All right, I think, let's see, what do we have here? Dido, I think you're next.
Yes, I just wanted to add a little bit about the links on shared by Nicola and the certification of the team members of a website, that this is another thing we have tested, that it really, let's say, counts. I don't mean that you will have a blow up of visibility or something like that, but it supports the trustworthiness of the people to your website, and it really works. It really works. It's way better. People are kind of trusting a website and a brand better that way, because they these people look more like experts coming from the company. Yeah.
Okay. So kind of like your coworkers and people who are working on the website to include more information on those. Yeah.
And the credibility of the team members. Yeah. This is really, really important, because it's like, let's imagine we have a doctor's website. And yes, we know that the doctor has his degrees and so on and so on. But once they share some certificates about conferences, seminars, additional practices they have passed within their background and so on, this looks like a little bit more credible, more trustworthy to trust your health, this specialist.
Yeah. Sounds like a good idea. OK, let me pause the recording here. I still have a bit more time. So if you want to stick around a little bit longer, you're welcome to do so. But thanks for all of the questions. Thanks for all of the comments along the way. And thanks for submitting questions on YouTube as well. If you're watching this recording, I hope you found this useful. And hopefully, I'll see you all again in one of the future Hangouts as well. All right. Let me see.
Thank you.
Thanks.